In what ways can we exasperate your kids? What does that look like and how can it be avoided? Okay, well, that's a good question. And it of course comes from the two passages. It especially resonates anyway with the two passages that come from Ephesians and Colossians. If we go to Ephesians, where you've got the instruction there to fathers, Ephesians chapter 6, of course, there's a parallel passage that's similar to it over in Colossians. We'll look at it in a second. But Ephesians 6, you have instruction. Of course, you have instruction to wives in chapter 5. Then you have instruction to husbands in chapter 5. And then you have instruction to children in chapter 6:1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. And then there's this: fathers, do not provoke. And even though Sonny uses the term exasperate, the Greek word there could be translated exasperate or provoke. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And then if we jump over to Colossians, you go over two books, Colossians chapter 3. Colossians and Ephesians are sister books. There's a lot of parallels between them. A lot of differences, but a lot of parallels as well. Colossians 3, verse 21. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. So it's interesting. It's always worth noting the differences in the parallel passages. One emphasizes anger, the Ephesians passage, and the other one emphasizes discouragement. Those are two different ways that a child can demonstrate exasperation. So, what are some ways? Here, one way: be inconsistent in your discipline. If your child does something and you spank them, they do the exact same thing tomorrow and you don't spank them. That is frustrating, that is exasperating, and that is, it's not good. Your children are always going to, they want to know where the boundaries are. They want to know where the fences are. They want to know what the rules are. And you know it as well as I do. Every child tests where the limits are. You're constantly training your children. If you tell your children, no, don't do that. Have you ever seen the mom in the line at the supermarket and the baby's in there or she's got, I was at the cop, I told you all, I didn't wear my mask the other day to Office Max. I was in there making copies. Well, there was a woman on the copier next to me and she had her son there and she kept telling him, no, don't do that. And then he'd do it. And then she, you know, up her voice and don't do that. And go find your sister and go. And so you've all seen this. You've all seen how children try to placate, or how parents try to placate their children. It's bad. I mean, if you tell your children three times before you make them obey, well, that's what you're training them to do. They recognize, well, I can get away with not doing this the first time, the second time, the third time. You know how some children are trained? You recognize by mom's pitch of voice when she's serious. You recognize when dad reaches a certain threshold, that's when you obey. But that's not what we want to do. We want to train our children that our words mean something. And if you're inconsistent, that's exasperating to children. If you basically say, you know, look, typically lost parents, they are consistent. They consistently shout and scream, but let their kids get away with murder. I mean, that's basically what the lost people do. Christians have some of the greatest ability to exasperate children at this point. Why? Because one day you read Proverbs and you're invigorated. Oh yeah, I'm supposed to withhold not correction. I'm supposed to spank my children. I'm supposed to through this discipline, this reproof. I'm supposed to bring my children up in this. You know, I don't want to hate my children. I don't want my children to bring me to shame. And so you read the Proverbs and you get all exhilarated to do this, or you hear a sermon about it online or at church, or, you know, somebody encourages you because they see your children misbehaving. And so you're back on the ball. But then what happens is you become careless and you become casual about it. And then you let the kids get away with it. And it's like, you ever heard the parent that, oh, well, they haven't had their nap. You know what that is? You know what a parent says that, what that is? That is a parent that is just excusing their children's rebellion because they don't want to deal with it. And because they're being inconsistent, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm usually consistent with this, but because they haven't had their nap, therefore I'm going to let them get away with it. I'm going to let the whole world know that that's why my child is embarrassing me right now. And anyway, I would just say this, be consistent. If you tell your children they can't do something, don't. Look, I would say this, it's better for you as parents to have 5 rules and demand the children keep those rules than to have 150 rules and you rarely demand that your children toe the line. Don't do that. Don't do that. I mean, because the thing is, if you're consistent and you train your children like that, in a little while, everything will be good. It's like I was telling our people this last Tuesday that, you know, when you read these books like Pastoring a Child's Heart, or Shepherding a Child's Heart, or Withhold Not Correction, I got various ones over here on my shelf. They typically tell you that if you discipline consistently, most of your discipline will be done by the time your children are 5 years of age. And my wife corrected me. I told our people 2 years, but she said, no, it's 5. Yeah, it is 5. But so that's one way, inconsistency in disciplining. Another way, we have a perfect example of in Scripture. Remember Jacob and how he dealt with Joseph, and he gave him a coat of many colors and it ended up getting him thrown in a pit. And anyway, don't play favorites with your kids. That'll exasperate, that'll hurt, that'll grieve them, that'll discourage them. And you know, we know this happens. Our children are different. And sometimes you get children that some children, they have different personalities, they have different looks, they have different athletic abilities, they have different IQs, they have, and you know, playing favorites or telling one child, I wish you could be like your brother, or that kind of thing, that'll just wreck a child. That would be something to definitely, don't give one child something and pass over. Children recognize that. I mean, they pick up on that. That's playing favorites among your own children. But I know that children can also often recognize that if you're possibly giving attention to other people more than them, even other people's children, that's just something that can happen to a man that's in the ministry. I mean, maybe it happens in other people's lives as well, but when you're good in ministry and you're having to, a man in the ministry has to divide his time between the church, and there's a lot of children in the church, and his own family. And if a man's children see that, maybe they feel like, hey, that's my dad, and he gives himself more to other people than to me. That is probably another. Another way to exasperate your children is never compliment them. lots of children grow up with an inferiority complex because often it's dad, and you see that dad gets the preeminence in both of these letters. There's a reason. But sometimes it's mom's. But you know, if you grow up with a father who never complimented you, you could never do right, you could never please him, it was like you were always made aware of your failures. You always felt like your parents found fault with you. If you have parents that make you feel like failures, that's another way. And sometimes you get children, so many children, especially sons. Sons want the approval of their dads. And they will strive for it, and they'll want it, and they'll seek it, they'll desire it. And that's another way. I mean, you don't want to ignore them. You want to pay attention to what interests them. You want to show that you care. You don't want to prioritize other things in life. There's especially this can happen with mothers, but it's really a problem with dads. Dad's prioritizing his hobbies, his chores, his job over his children. And you know, I don't know if you all have the same prominence behind the song that we have here in the States, but back in the 70s, there was a song here called Cats in the Cradle. You ever heard that song? I mean, it's basically a song where it starts out by, there's a son born to a man, and the father's not there. And the son starts to walk and talk, and the father's not there. But he says, you know, well, we're going to get together. When we do, we're going to have a good time then. But he never gets together with him. The son's 10 years old. Dad gives him a baseball or something for his birthday. Son wants him to play catch with him, but the father's too busy. Then, you know, as the story evolves, then all of a sudden the son's in college. Now the dad wants time with the son, and the son's too busy. And then the son's grown up. And the whole gist of it is the son kept saying, I'm going to be just like you, Dad. And in the end, the dad recognizes the son came out the same way. But anyway, I mean, it's a song about just a father ignoring his son. And even though it doesn't, I mean, look, it's just a song. And it said that the son would constantly go away with a smile on his face saying, I'm going to be just like you, Dad. But that's not the way it is in real life. The son doesn't go away with a smile. The son goes away hurt. And the son goes away discouraged and disappointed. And he ultimately ends up finding that approval either in his mom. And then you end up with a bunch of homosexuals, and that ends up being, if you look at the effeminate qualities of homosexuals and the relationships they had with their dads and with their moms, or they end up finding that approval in friends. And friends are young like them. And you know what you end up with? Like Solomon's son, Rehoboam. What did Rehoboam do? He sought counsel from the old men. He sought counsel from his peers, from the young guys. And he went with the counsel of the young guys, and it led him losing the majority of the kingdom. Because that's what happens when you pay attention to young people, because they're fools just like you are. And so that's what'll happen. And so these are some areas. But I just say this. You know, on Tuesday, one of the questions that came up was just from a father, just saying, you know, he was actually asking, at what point do I begin to have serious conversations about sexual things with my children? And in the end, I didn't give him any kind of exact answer. But what I told him is this: one thing that's absolutely certain, if you look at the statistics, like different police departments and stuff have done statistics, if you've got children that grow up without a father, the possibility they're going to end up being felons, high school dropouts, get abortions. I mean, go down the list. If if children grew up with both their parents there, especially a mom that stays home with the children and a dad who's involved in the lives of his children, you don't even have to have all the rules exactly right. Just being there, investing in your children and loving them makes all the difference in the world. And not everybody has to do it the same. Different parents are going to have different rules. Their households are going to be different. Their children are going to be different. They're different. What they approve of, if they get their children involved in sports or not, if they homeschool or not, all these different things. But I'll tell you this, if you've got a mom and a dad who are involved, and I recognize that there's situations where there's one parent missing from the family and that's providential. But even there, I think that the church can help, like Gaynor's children, if especially her sons. You know, I think there's a place for some of you men in the church to help and spend some time with them so that there can be some good strong male figures in the family. And anyway, these just having a mom and dad that are there and involved, I mean, that's not vacating the responsibilities that God has given, especially dads. I mean, that's why dads are there. Dads get the preeminence in Scripture, and there's a reason. I mean, the Proverbs, it's dad, mainly a dad to the son. In Colossians and Ephesians, it's mainly the dad. Why? Because God just designed it that way. It's so important. And I think dads oftentimes have, isn't it interesting? I mean, which parent is it that said not to exasperate? There's a reason for that. It's almost like moms have it built into them to be motherly. Dads, we're free rangers. I mean, we want to go conquer the world. We want to go and, you know, we want to investigate. We want to go explore. We want to climb the mountains, and we want to go do the things, and we've got jobs to do, and we got to support the family, and we're the ones that seem to have the greater ability just to exasperate the children by our meanness, our harshness, ignoring, finding other things being more important. Anything else on that?
What were the books that you mentioned then, Tim?
Yeah, I've got a...
I'm presuming you'd recommend them.
I've got this one called Shepherding a Child's Heart. It's by Ted Tripp. That's a winner. John MacArthur's written a book on what the Bible says about parenting. This is a classic, Withhold Not Correction by Bruce. Matthew Henry did Building a God-Centered Family. So those are some. But the Proverbs, I would say really, go through the Proverbs and make notes. I've made notes all over the Proverbs. I divide them up. You know what's very interesting? Look at the Proverbs and look at the subject matter that the father feels is most important to impress upon his son. You know, you can't go wrong with the emphasis there. It's inspired emphasis. And what is it that God has to talk about? I mean, through the preacher there. Choose your companions very carefully. Watch out for certain women. Lots is said about having a good work ethic and not being lazy. Lots is said about how we handle money. Lots is said about how we handle our tongue. I mean, if you just think about the things that are emphasized there, what a what a I mean, even from when our children are 1 year old, 2 year old, there's principles there that you want to begin instilling into your children. And as I was talking to the brethren here, you know, the primary question that came up for us on Tuesday was, what if there are certain children in the church that I don't want my children to associate with? And so there was a question about that. And that led into, really, we spent 2 hours talking about children. But, you know, one of the things that I mentioned to them is, you know, the moment our children start walking, they start very openly having relationships with other kids. And so you've got that whole relational dynamic that begins in our children when, and you know, little children are attracted to other children. As the children are growing up, you know, look around the church, the children, they migrate towards each other. And suddenly you've got all sorts of issues on how they talk with each other and who their friends are, and even about, eventually, as they grow up more, you know, who possibly their mate will be, and but there's just all sorts of good, solid wisdom. I mean, that's why it's the wisdom literature. There's lots of wisdom about what to impart to our children. Anything else on that?
Yeah, can I just ask a question, Tim? And it was regarding, I mean, Ellen and I don't have kids, and it would take a miracle for that to change. However, I wanted to ask a question about complementing kids. And would you make a distinction between complementing kids according to, let's say, good things done of character rather than accomplishments of maybe skill or talent? Would you make a distinction between?
I think there's a place for well done. I think it's going to be important to constantly emphasize to your children that any abilities they have, any common grace they have, it comes from the Lord. But that doesn't mean that we can't acknowledge the good that we see in them or that which we find pleasing in them. And so, you know, if the child does something that's nice, I think if the child does something that's generous, or if the child can throw a good fastball, you guys don't do baseball, he can kick a good soccer ball.
Football.
A what?
Football.
What are you calling it?
Football.
Or football. No. Football's what Mahomes throws to the wide receiver. But just, I think it's very rare that you find we don't want to idolize our children. And so we don't want to get to the place where there's this pride. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about encouraging our children and saying, well done. I mean, children so badly want the approval of their parents. And it creates insecurity when they don't receive that.